Welcome back to another episode of the Sterminatus Podcast. Hello, my name is Eric, the host you want to have a drink with. And our current host, co-host with us, sporting some new ink, is Ray. And our third co-host, who drives his opponents to the brink, Don Hoosen.
Hey.
So welcome, guys, back. We had a huge weekend this weekend with 40K, Nova Open, GW opening the vaults of new products to be coming out. We had two other events from around the globe. Lots to go over this weekend. Let's start with the news from the GW seminar at Nova. Ray, what did they talk about?
They did a short preview for Speed Freak and announced the new war boss on Defkella Wartrike. They did mention that it will be in the new codex. Talked a little bit about it, including the Daka Daka Daka, which is every time you roll an unmodified hit roll of a 6 for an attack with a ranged weapon, that hit roll succeeds regardless of any modifiers. In addition, you get an additional hit roll with that. And that additional hit will not generate any further.
So, Don, you saw that and immediately predicted orcs will be the biggest shooting army in 40K.
And it's all about weighted dice, and if there's one thing orcs like to do, it's weighted dice. And nothing else, the being capped at effectively a -1 to hit is actually pretty strong. And a whole lot of Eldar players that I play against are like, well, here's my -3 unit of Rangers. Mm-hmm. And with orcs, you just go, nah, beat you on sixes. Also, that means that they will almost always be advancing with their assault weapons.
Yeah, it's a ton of shots being poured downfield. And I was curious, does that also extend to the vehicles as well? So that's just like, oh, that could get really, really brutal down the line. Or cunning, depending on how you look at it.
Well, going based off of the fact that they are not Marines of any sort, I'm pretty certain that they will extend to their vehicles.
Well played, sir. Ray, any other news from Nova?
Yeah, a few other things. The next thing I've got here is they showed a quick preview of some of the CAD programming for the design for Sisters of Battle Heads, just to kind of whet everybody's palate for the upcoming Adeptus Sororitas. And they also announced that we would see a beta version of the Codex later this year. I believe they said it was going to be in the chapter approved.
I believe that you're right.
So that'll be exciting for the Sisters players. They announced that in September we'll see the newest version of the Knight's Box that also includes the Knight Perceptor, and that we would also be seeing more transfer sheets for the Imperial Knights. They announced a kill team command roster, they called it, which is, of course, a way to build lists for kill team. They announced some webcomics.
Not just any webcomic.
The first one that they announced is Turn Signals on a Land Raider, which I had never heard of before.
Classic. It's one of the originals. I mean, it goes back eons ago. I mean, this is like pre-Bella Lost Souls, back like when Portent was the only website on the net for rumors.
The next one they announced is called Vainglorious. Looks to be some sort of an adventures for a rogue trader.
That does look interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that. Yeah, it's first thing I thought of. It looks kind of like Star Wars Rebels a little bit.
The next one, thing that they talked about was the new Warhammer Underworlds. People currently are calling it the first they're calling them seasons, known as Shadespire. But this one is Night Vault. It's introducing magic into it, so could be interesting for those who like Shadespire. It's going to have new cards, it's going to have a new Night Haunt faction and another Stormcast faction in that box. They also showed a picture of all things, a flying squig in there as well. The next thing they previewed was a trailer for a new game called Realm of Chaos, Wrath and Rapture. Could be portents for the new Slaanesh line that people have been talking about. I still occasionally hear talk that we're going to see Slaanesh later this year, early next year. We get some Middle Earth stuff for the new strategy battle game that just came out. And then we get to the announcement of the Warhammer Community event endorsements.
Yeah, this one came out of left field. I'm not really sure what to make of this one.
So at first I thought it was going to be kind of cool. In fact, I'll come back to this after I finish with the rest of the announcements, and because today they announced a little bit more behind this. The final thing they announced, at least that I have remembered, is Warhammer Quest, and it is the Blackstone Fortress. A lot of people remember that they did the Warhammer Quest for Age of Sigmar pretty recently, both the Silver Tower and Hammerhall. But this time around, it looks like they're doing one for 40K. And of course, it's set on one of these fortresses, which I've heard a lot about, but I don't really know much about.
All right, so tell us more about this community certification thingy. This was kind of caught me out of left field, and it's like, what is this about?
Yeah, so they're going to start doing some, you could call it support, for the tournament scene. And there are going to be three levels. The first level is listed. Small events and new events are going to be, you can get them posted on a Warhammer Community events calendar where they will be posting where all the events are going to be. There is the supported level for events that are at least 130 people. They haven't announced what that means that it's supported. They said they're going to later, but it does include people from the Warhammer community team attending in person or possibly to provide support. And then there's the last level is the endorsed. These, of course, are going to be the really big events. In fact, the Nova Open was their first endorsed event. These are the kind of things where you can expect studio previews and all sorts of extra stuff going on there.
Okay. That actually sounds intriguing. I'll put it that way. I definitely agree. Those mega events endorse where that makes sense. The super events. I guess that mid-tier range is a little muddy to me at this point.
It isn't really mid-tier, though.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Is 100? Is it 138? Is the cutoff?
130.
130. I'm trying to think. There are very few of those tournaments in England that are that large, and here in the States.
Honestly, the only ones that get that high are going to be the ones that would be at the top level anyway.
Well, I'm trying to think. Like SoCal will probably hit that. The Area Open. And then I'm trying to think of maybe WarGamesCon. And I can't think of any other ones off the top of my head that wouldn't qualify into the upper category. You know, Adepticon, Nova, LVO. They're going to hit the top ranking. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of those other big tournaments we talk about, you know, T-Shift, Renegade Open, Conquest, Midwest Conquest, they also run around between 70 to 100 and 110. 130. That's a steep climb. Okay. Hey, bar's been raised. Don, we got to sell tickets.
Will do.
Call my venue back. We're going to need to twice the space. All right. Interesting. And I'll be curious to see as they had more announcements to come about what that support looks like. But you know what? I'm excited. Now that I hear that the GW is getting a little more involved, that's kind of exciting to hear. So one other announcement also came out this morning was the more not so much 40K related, but still tickles it a little bit, is the new kill team that came out. And it's a specific Inquisitor. And if you see the figure, it's definitely worthy of picking up for your 40K army. It's kind of a cross between Inquisitor Greyfax and the Singer Sia. Has this weird veil in front of her face, but a simple head swap and the thing could look really cool. It just makes me wonder when, was it a year ago, somebody claimed to have seen Plastic Sisters of Battle models, and they kept describing many of them had veils over their face and had a very different look. I wonder if this is what they were looking at when they saw these original models. But it's interesting to see the kill team is going to a very heroic way of playing, that there are specific rules for this particular kill team, you know, this box set, that are, you know, rather than just saying I'm playing faction X and making your own, there's going to be some more like heroic teams involved, which is honestly something I think they missed the boat on Blood Bowl. You know, if you read the background, there's some great teams of history and there's no rules for them anywhere. So that is kind of our news of the week. Overall impressions in terms of what came out?
I was a little disappointed that they didn't do anything for the Genestealer cult. I mean, I knew that we would probably see something for orcs just because of game coming out, but I really expected to see something. I mean, they're the last official codex as of right now, and we haven't really seen anything outside of the, you know, the models that came out in the Tooth and Claw.
I know one of the things I was excited about is when I saw that beautiful model, the orc on his giant bike of doom. And at the same point, I felt a tremendous sense of dread, as the only other model that I'm aware of that's anything at all like that is Logan on his sleigh. And we all know what happened with that.
Yeah, we all got coal in our stockings. Oh, well.
Hey, it could be good. There's a difference between orc on a trike and Space Marine being led on a sleigh from a pair of wolves.
Yeah, the issue is the number of wounds, though.
Yeah.
That is literally the only issue. Because otherwise, I don't mind staying on a sleigh, but he's super easy to kill and should be the first thing anyone kills in that army if he's on the board.
But we'll see what the orc boss on a big wheel looks like when it comes to that. Codex should be dropping pretty soon. Hopefully, we'll get some more information as what's to come out. But the Daka Daka rule was pretty frightening when I saw that. And I was kind of hoping for, something else. And it didn't quite come. But that's okay. I am curious to hear that Chapter Approved will have a beta codex in it, which tells me, all right, that's going to take up a whole lot of space. What else is going to be in that Chapter Approved? Because you remember our last Chapter Approved had pretty much everybody got a warlord trait, a stratagem, and a relic. Now most of those armies already have a codex, so are basically all those pages going to be designated to Sisters of Battle? I don't know.
Well, then there's also the narrative play, open play, and all stuff like that in there too. But I'm sure that'll stay unchanged as far as they're probably going to have all that in there for the updated missions.
Well, we could see different missions.
Though, you know what I'd be most interested to see? New terrain rules.
Yeah, they could use a little tweaking here and there. And especially with all the newer kits that have been released for Kill Team that are clearly interchangeable for 40K. So, yeah, little tweaks here and there would be kind of nice. But nonetheless, we will see what comes out in the future. After the break, we'll dive into the tournament review. Three tournaments to talk about, plus wall-to-wall Nova updates and depth analysis. Coming back right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do Spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back. After the break, we start our tournament coverage in the lovely snowy hills of Scandinavia for the Westeros ITC 8. Their very large turnout for this part of time, almost 77 players, which is, it's a great turnout. Glad to see that around the world. So start off with your top eight. In eighth place with Richard Foster with Drukhari. A tie for sixth place between Jonas Parison with Imperial Knights and Patrick Stroma with Drukhari. Another tie for fourth place now is Jonathan Slay Johnson with Adeptus Sororitas, otherwise known as Sisters of Battle, and Christoph Fiedler with Drukhari. In third place, Johan Nicolisen with Imperial Knights. In second place, Jimmy Pedersen with Prophets of the Flesh. And your Westeros champion for 2018 is Oscar Lemming with Astra Militarum. Nice to see a quick turn out there. Just a quick look at Oster's winning list, see if he's indeed a lemming. And yes, he is. He follows the same Astra Militarum list as everybody else. Two captains, two Blood Angel captains on jump pack, Storm Shield, Thunder Hammers, followed by three units of five scouts. He then follows that up with a whole bunch of S Militarum infantry, company commanders, Ogryn Bodyguard squad, Ministerum priest, and a platoon commander, three Hellhounds, three heavy support teams made up of mostly mortars, and then, of course, a Knight Castellan. So, no points for originality, but congratulations, going a perfect 5-0 on the weekend. Matter of fact, three players came in 5-0 in this. Jimmy Peterson with Prophets of the Flesh. Quick look at that list. Oh, he even has little areas to put in his psychic powers on his list. How handy. So he starts it off with a battalion, Farseer Skyrunner, Warlock and Warlock Skyrunner, three units of five Rangers, and a unit of eight Shining Spears. He then follows it up with Homoculus, and then three units of Talos, one triple threat and one with only two units, all with chain flails, macro scalpels, and haywire blasters. He then rounds it out with a spearhead detachment of an Archon and three Ravagers. Don, it's all your favorite units in one army. How do you like that?
That's probably why I didn't get first.
Bastard. Third place with the Johann Nicolaisen with Imperial Knights. His list looks like it was photocopied underwater, but we'll try and read it. Battalion consisting of company commander and a Primaris Psyker. Three units of guardian of guard, being good guardsmen, heavy weapons teams of mortars, followed by a House Raven Castellan. Actually took two of those. It looks like what he did. And then that's about it for the list. Like I said, not the clearest list to read. So no real surprises in the list department there. But glad to see, again, 77-person event in Sweden. I think it's Sweden. Somewhere in Scandinavia. Very psyched to see that. But wait, there's more. The Ardcore Open 2018. If you're not sure about this event, this may have snuck up on you. That's okay. It's being held in Malaysia. That's right, folks. This is how Warhammer's rocked in the Asian continent. It looks something like this. They, first of all, had how many players? Impressive. They had 50 players for this event. And their top eight looks something like this. Ibn Muhammad came in eighth place with Jukari. And seventh place, Benjamin Chia with Eldari. Sixth place, Daryl Tan with Chaos Demons. Fifth place, Sharul Azmi with Yanari. Fourth place, Victor Ko with Imperial Knights. Third place, Suban Anwar with Imperial Knights. Second place, Chu Han Ang with a Surayani. And your Ardcore 2018 champion is Joe Ko with Eldari. Those are some of the coolest names I've ever had to announce. That was really cool. Quick looks at Joe's first place winning army there. Again, starts off with a spearhead detachment of an Archon and three Ravagers, follows it up with a battalion, two Skyrunners, one Warlock, one Farseer, with three units of five Rangers. Here we go. And then he follows it up with three Fire Prisms and two Hemlock Wraithfighters. Given all the knights that were in that meta, that might actually make sense. Second place was Chu Han Ang with a Surayani. His army looks pretty similar. He's got Bahara and a Farseer Skyrunner, three units of five Rangers, a small unit of four Dark Reapers, and starts a second battalion of two Archons, three units of five Kabbalite Warriors, four Venoms, and then an Airwing detachment of three Hemlock Wraithfighters. So we're definitely seeing a subtle spin on the Asian meta. Last but not least, Suban Raven Heavy Knights. He starts out with a super heavy detachment, Castellan, a Crusader, and a Warden, followed by a battalion of company commanders, infantry squads, no mortar teams there. So I guess this tells you that you can go all the way to the other end of the world and still play the same armies over and over again.
One of the things I'm trying to figure out is how they had 12 ties round one. And the scoring for those 12 ties versus the scoring for the couple ties in round three, or the 12 ties in the first round are 1,020. All of them are. It looks...
I'm not sure.
Very odd.
It does look odd. It does look like they're still using ITC missions, though.
Or at least they tried to. Their scoring... They messed up on their scoring a bit, by the looks of it, yeah.
It looks like it got put down as battle points as far as the actual format, and then they just manually input the Swiss points that it would be.
Yeah, looks something like that. So, very interesting. Glad to see that and supporting Warhammer across the world. So, coming back to the States, as we've been talking about all day, Nova Open. We'll start with the Invitational. This one is a very different format. This is simply a kind of a March Madness bracketing format. Of course, I said that to Don earlier in the week, and he's like, what's March Madness? And I went, okay, great, sports guy. So what this basically means is you were paired up with somebody at the start of the tournament, and it is a single elimination. So if you lose, you're done, go home. And but however, your next opponent's pairing is already determined by the bracket system. So usually the table next to you is the way they set it up. So it's kind of fun because you could predict, kind of like just like in March Madness, you could predict who you think was going to win and use some fun trying to predict who would be your eventual champion. I decided to play at home. I had a really good first round. I only got two wrong. So I was able to predict 14 of the 16 winners. So I was really excited. And then the next round, I got completely blown away. So I think I got every winner wrong in the next round. It's like, oh, crap. Anyway, a little fun at home that you can play with. So anyway, the final four looks something like this. Alex Fennell knocked off Nick Nadavati to move into the finals, where Tony Kopach knocked off Nick Rose, which was interesting. So you have pretty much an all ETC final four. So left it with Tony Kopach with Astro Militarum, Blood Angels, Imperial Guard list, which they were, yeah, plenty of those throughout this particular small tournament, against Alex Fennell's Astro Militarum, Imperial Knight list. And Tony Kopach was able to seal the deal and take the win in the Invitational. So a quick shout out to Nick Rose for taking Nids and Gene Stealer Cult without a codex. He was able to make it to the Final Four, just narrowly losing to Tony Kopach. So that was your Invitational. Again, good fun. It's one of those can get a little audience participation as the tournament rolls through. So those are some of our big events there. Before we get into the big event, and that would be the Nova Open Grand Tournament, that we'll talk about a little bit about their missions and what makes Nova a little bit different from every other tournament. First and foremost, Nova's one of the first tournaments to implement the bracketing system. And basically the way that works is day one of the tournament, but this year they were a 8-round tournament, so you play 4 games on day one. And depending on how you finished on day one, determined which bracket you replaced to day two. So the goal was to get into the top bracket. The good news about this is no matter how well you did, day two, you're going to get 4 games against players of equal ability. Because you're basically each bracket was 16 players, and they would do Swiss pairings only among the 16 players within your bracket. The bad news is if you didn't get into that top bracket, you're pretty much out of contention for the title. So getting into that top 16 was absolutely critical on day one. Second key thing that makes Nova a little bit different is they were one of the first tournaments to implement standardized terrain on every table. So you knew ahead of time what that terrain looks like, and it is a bit heavier than your standard tournament terrain layout. So that's kind of nice to look at. Also makes it kind of convincing that's with the 2 line of sight blockers at dead center, makes it a little more intriguing for assault armies, but still lends quite a bit to shooting armies that can be able with mobility. Don, you've played against this terrain on quite a bit of time, so what are your thoughts on how this terrain setup works?
So it is definitely a lot heavier. I do definitely think it does lend itself to more of an assault-based thing. We saw that for sure with like Justin Curtis in the Open, for example. He did really well with the Magnarian list, which is a purely assault army. So that gives you an idea of how much it helps that out compared to the shooting galleries that you see in some of these events where that list would not make it across the table.
Yep. Other thing to bear in mind, Nova's been around for quite some time and they actually implemented this terrain back in 5th edition. So these bases are a lot larger than what you may be used to when you see ITC missions. Most of these are 12-inch by 12-inch blocks. So they are taking up a large real estate in large chunks, whereas the ITC terrain is about 8.5 by 8.5 inches. So one or two terrain pieces, you don't really notice it, but as they start to multiply, there's about 7 to 8 terrain pieces on the table. You start feeling just how heavy those terrain tables are. Last but not least, Nova has always prided themselves on their own mission pack. And they've been kind of on the forefront of mission design. And we were talking a little bit about the beginning of the show. Parts of their ideas were really cool. And, well, even the innovators sometimes come up with bad ideas. So let you guys judge. So right off the bat, primary missions are worth 18 out of a possible 40 points. What makes this interesting is you as a player can choose which of the two primaries you're going to play. That is, do you want to score all your points at the end of the game, like a book mission, or do you want to score your mission round by round, similar to how we do in the ITC? So right off the bat, guys, what do you think of this particular format that each player could be, their opponent could be playing literally a different version of your mission?
I'm a very large fan of that because it makes it so that there is actually options. In 8th edition, though, it's a lot harder to do since everything dies. So playing for the end game is a lot harder to do.
It's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. I definitely like the idea that you can tailor it against certain matchups. One example I ran into last time I played at Nova was I had an assault-based list. My opponent had a stand-back-and-shoot list, so I took progressive missions. So I was like, come at me, bro. Basically, I'm going to stand on these objectives, and you either try and blow me off them, but there's enough terrain where you have the, you can only, there's no way he could shoot every objective, so he'd have to have like either focus fire, and likewise, I would send a couple deep threats to wrangle his long range shooting. So I was able to rack up points as the game progressed, but then I also had to be aware I had to kill enough of his unit so at the end of the game he couldn't just play musical chairs and collect a whole bunch of points at the end of the game. So, and it, I agree, it does help you eliminate the whole bad matchup thing. There are secondaries, which are worth 12 points. Each player chooses 4. This is very similar to what we're used to in the ITC. They have several, and several people probably recognize as very similar. They have different names, but they're pretty much the same concepts. So we've already talked about secondaries in great length in previous episodes. So pretty much the same idea. You know, you pick the ones that you think you can do based on what your opponent's army has. Or you may, you know, such as, you know, destroy 2 units in one for each turn, kill 20 models, you get 1 point, have people in the, each table quarter, just like they call it reconnaissance. They have an old school, they have a couple other ones. So we've all talked about these before. Two more that were interesting. One of the secondaries is points destroyed. So if I destroyed 500 points of your army, I got 1 point. If I destroyed 1,000 points of your army, I got 2 points. And if I killed 1,500 points, I got the last 2 points. So there was an incentive to knock you down as far as possible, but you didn't have to table your opponent to get the full 4 points. Kind of a nice little kill point type, objective thrown in there. But this last one, I'm still scratching my head. I think this may make more sense if I practice it, but I'm still trying to figure it out. It's called Engineers. During the mission, select 2 of your units to be engineers. They may only be single model units if they have the monster or vehicle keyword. And at the end of your movement phase, any of your engineers may investigate an objective they're within 3 inches of. As they do so, they may not manifest psychic powers, declare charges, shoot, except for Overwatch that always fight last in the fight phase. And when they investigate, they gain a point, and you're allowed up to 6 per game, no more than 2 in a single turn. Obviously, because you only have 2 engineers. And the same engineer can only investigate 1 objective per turn.
I'm going to guess that's what all the guard portions of the guard Imperial Knight Blood Angel lists were doing.
I guess so. I guess my biggest thing, one more thing to do. That's a lot of thought process. There's already a lot going on, specifically if my opponent's also chose a different primary mission than I did. I don't know if I could keep track of all that, but okay. Maybe if I practice it, it'd be better.
I think that's one of the biggest differences between us. I focus on what I can do more than what my opponent can do.
Well, it is a big difference between the two of us because, yeah, you definitely are I've got a plan, I'm going to ram it down your throat, whereas I'm very much a counterpunch person. I'm going to let my opponent do their thing on turn one, lure them into a trap, and then counterpunch. And but either way, this whole idea of chasing down, well, 6 points is pretty significant. It's, you know, almost, it's half your secondaries. I don't know. Just something we'd have to practice at this point. Last but not least, the other change that Nova opened, this is something they've banged the drum on really loud, and I don't think anybody's listening, to be honest with you, is they have fixed deployment zones. They do not do random deployment zones with their missions, which I thought was interesting. I'm kind of a fan of because it goes faster. I kind of proposed a hybrid. You choose 1 of 2, but I do get a little frustrated with the roll off to see who determines deployment zone. Ah, you have the privilege of randomly determining a deployment. I don't get it.
Now I forgot, do they still have random objective placement?
No, they are fixed. As I'm going through their mission picket.
That's the thing. That's also really weird, because normally it's, you know, they get the random deployments or you get the random objective placement. It's very rare that you don't get either.
Yeah, going through. And a lot of their missions, I didn't realize this until as I'm speaking now. The smallest is 4 objectives, but most of them have 6. I take that back. All of them have 6 objectives, and 1 of the missions, 4 of them are mandated, and then 2 of them, each player places 1 of their choosing. But of course, it's 12 inches from any table edge and 12 inches from another objective, so you don't have a whole lot of options where to place it. So that's interesting. Every mission has 6 objectives.
And the funny part is, to be honest, I like the more objectives on the table approach. Something quite like having the what the IDC used to have, fortunately got voted out, where you have 2 objectives, so it's, I have mine, you have yours, let's kill each other.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, that not only got voted, I mean, that got just trounced on. That was just, but I agree with you, I do prefer more objectives on the table, and I do prefer the 6. I like that. Interesting, though. Yeah, just, does it favor certain armies? Probably does. And probably favors the armies I like. So I could see that going both ways. Yeah. It's one reason why I like that mission in Chapter Approved where you can destroy objectives, you know, rather than hold on to them. But so those are your basics, your ground. So keep all those in mind as those changes come into place. So it's not your typical mission. Max score is 40 points. So those are your mission packs for Nova Open. After the break, we'll go over your top 8. And we're back. So after 200 plus members battled it out for a long weekend in Crystal City, Washington, D.C. area, we have your top 8, and looks something like this. We had a tie for 8th place between Alan and Blake Burrow playing Blood Angels and Chris Blackham featuring Drukhari. 7th place, Shane Watts with Adeptus Custodes. 6th place, Alex Ng with Imperial Knights. In fifth place, Justin Curtis with Thousand Suns. A tie for third between Eric Trock, featuring Katagen Jungle Fighters, and Nick Nottavati with his Inari list, which seemed to have been posted all over the internet the week leading up to Nova. In second place, somebody we've talked about several times, Trent Northington with Katagen Jungle Fighters jumps into the number two spot, but it was not enough to knock off the single undefeated player for Nova this weekend. Andrew Gagneau, also featuring Katagen Jungle Fighters. That's right, folks, he went a perfect 8-0 over the weekend. And pretty much everyone, so you look at your top four, 7-1. Not too often that you can win 7 out of 8 games and not come in first place in a tournament. It's pretty impressive there. So let's take a quick look at Andrew's Nova busting list here. So he starts off with a Knight Castellan in its own auxiliary detachment. Then comes in with a Brigade, perfectly at 999 points. Featuring a Primaris Psyker, Strachan, Company Commander, a Priest, Ogre and Bodyguard, a unit of 10 Crusaders with Power Sword and Storm Shield, followed by a second unit of 8 Crusaders armed the same way. 6 units of 10 Infantry Squad of 10 guys. In the fast deck slot, 3 Scout Sentinels, 1 with a heavy flamer, 2 with multi-lasers, and then 3 heavy weapon teams made up of mortars. And finally, rounded out, you just can't leave home without them, apparently, a Blunt Angel Battalion featuring 2 captains, jump pack, Thunderhammer, Storm Shield, and 3 units of 5 Scouts. So slightly different variants. What do you guys think of this list?
Yeah, to me, it's still a Igard battery. Unfortunately,
I think looking at the mission specifically for Nova, that the Crusaders might have been his engineers for this case.
Just going based off what I saw him do in the last game that was actually streamed, I don't believe they were actually used as 2+ invul save things that were just annoying to get in the way.
I could see that. So looking to Trent Northington's list, who came in second place, it's pretty much a mirror match. The only difference is there is the IG battalion's a little bit different. So he went with the battalion, set up brigade, company commander, Primaris Psyker, 3 units of infantry squads, 3 hellhounds, 2 with heavy flamers, and then a unit of 2 with heavy bolters. He still has the same Bulgrin squad. He had added an astropath and then a second unit of Ogryn as well. How would you say those two, I mean, slight alterations, or are we just big changes, or are we just rearranging chairs on the Titanic here?
I think it's definitely going to be playing musical chairs here in a little bit when the FAQ comes in, I'm sure.
Cynic as always. Appreciate it, Don. As I talked about, it's all over the internet, but I'm also read it off one more time because there was a little bit of controversy with this. This is Nick Nottavati's list, and many people had predicted him to be the winner. Came up a little short, both in the Invitational and the Open. So we start off with a Prophets of the Flesh Battalion featuring Urien Rakath, Hemoculus with Electrocorrosive Whip, 2 units of 7 Grotesques, and 2 units of 5 Racks with a single unit of 9 Racks. He then follows that up with an Inari battalion featuring the Incarn, Eldrad, a Spirit Seer, who's featuring Baltan, a unit of 20 Guardians, 2 units of 5 Rangers, and a unit of 9 Shining Spears. And then he took an auxiliary detachment of 5 Kabbalite Warriors of Cabal of the Black Heart. And it's interesting, he's added to that. It looks like some sort of conversation he had with the judges showing would this list be legal. And I guess there's some confusion of whether the Nova can make the right call.
So I've definitely seen this argument, and it is rules as written, perfectly legal. The Prophets of the Flesh detachment that he has is not an auxiliary detachment, so it unlocks the Jukari stratagems. And according to the Warhammer community side of saying, you need to have a Black Heart detachment, it does not exclude an auxiliary detachment, so him simply having that one unit made it okay for him to use Agent's Effect per raw.
So there you have it. So, again, pretty much the same. I think the small tweaks that I see with this list is I don't remember him running the Grotesques in his previous list. Matter of fact, I don't remember him having any of the Prophets of Flesh in his previous versions of his list. I caught a couple of his games. Unfortunately, my boss was in town, so I didn't get to watch much of it. curious how he was using them, especially because he's already got the Shining Spears kind of being that shooting fallback salt type list. I don't know. Interesting, but curious to see if he continues to use them moving forward. Any other lists catch your guys' attention from Nova this weekend?
I know I was a big fan of finally seeing a Magnarian doing well. And after hearing what the actual missions were, it actually made a lot of sense, because Magnarian lists, what they do is they effectively focus on tabling your opponent and your ability to stop them from doing progressive missions. And if you don't get destroyed, you literally wipe them out. So if you go first, you get that lucky charge with that warp time, everything like that, you do really well. And that's why Justin Curtis, I believe, why he went 6-2 and almost won the event.
So quick look at that list. He's got, it starts off with two super heavy auxiliary detachments. The first one featuring Mortarion, the second one featuring Magnus the Red. He rounds that out with a battalion of Thousand Suns featuring Ahriman on disc, Demon Prince of Zeech with Malefic Talon, Warp Bolter, and Wings. That was also his Warlord, and he's penciled in Helm of the Third Eye. He also has a regular sorcerer, seems to be on foot. He then rounds out the list with a unit of 10 cultists, a unit of 25 Zangors, and a second unit of 25 Zangors.
That's just a lot of stuff in your face, turn one. Like, a lot.
How do you break down this list? Because you've got two bulk units of Zangors, and you've got two Primarchs in your face as well, which are not easy to kill.
So, generally speaking, what you have to watch out for is you're going to get a Dark Crystal unit of Zangors up in your face, probably turn 1 or turn 2. Mortarion is going to be in your face turn 1. And then turn 2, you get the Deep Striking Zangors with Magnus for the second punch, and it is just a lot of damage you have to absorb. So if you aren't able to take care of all of them by the time they're in your face, you're going to get ran over. Especially with a proper amount of line of sight blocking, which Nova was doing a really good job of putting all that stuff in the way.
So is there a way to stop getting run over? I mean, it's just a matter of screening. Is it a matter of how do you stop? I mean, once you've, you know, fail the roll and your opponent's going first, how do you survive that?
Proper screening is the best way for it to go. Which I know the game I saw with him versus Andrew Gagneau, he put his scouts up to the point where a couple of the Primarchs couldn't move as far forward as they wanted to. And that helped out a fair bit. It also stopped the Dark Crystal Zangors from being picked up and dropped into his lines because of the part that they have to be at least 9 inches away. So that kind of stuff helps out a lot, where you only have to deal with one threat at a time. And fortunately, he was able to sacrifice a captain and do all of his damage into Mortarion to drop him that one turn. And then Magnus failed a couple rolls and just died. But yeah, it was one of the things that you just need to get lucky and take out those two Primarchs ASAP and still have something that can absorb the Zangor charges.
One other list outside of the top eight, thought it was interesting because a bit of an internet celebrity, and he's been unusually secret about this particular list. That's Rhys Robbins, Frontline Gaming. He took Ultramarines. He was actually 4-0, and then ended up losing his last two games. Quick look at his list. First of all, geez, Rhys, would you write this on the back of your like a restaurant receipt? It's handwritten. So he starts out with Bobby G, Tigerius, Teleon, and then a Captain with Thunder Hammer and Storm Shield. He has six units of five scouts, three of them with bolters, three of them with sniper rifles. It's got a Company Champion, an Apothecary, a Primaris Ancient, a unit of 10 Stern Guard, three units of three Scout Bikers with bolters, and then looks like three units of five Devastator Squads with the Chirrup and Heavy Bolters. So I know this was kind of his rallying cry that Vanilla Marines are still significant in 8th edition, but I'll give him credit. He won his first four games in a row, and in the two games that he lost, he still racked up a fair amount of points. What do you guys think of the list?
I think it's really hard to go wrong with, you know, Bobby G in a list like that, especially with Knights being so prevalent. I'm actually surprised you don't see more Bobby G gun lines because of how prevalent that Knights are, because they just destroy Knights. They flat out destroy Knights, which is probably one of the reasons why I did so well. Not taking anything away from him, but that list is really good at killing big single models.
When I look at the list, why the heavy bolters on the Devastator squads? Is it just because of that stratagem, or am I missing something?
So there's the stratagem, and then it's a really effective tool, especially with all the rerolls of clearing hordes, and it does actually do a fair amount of damage to the big guys too, because when you're on fives with rerolls for a whole lot of shots that are, you know, doing four up saves on your knight.
Any other thoughts on Nova from this past weekend?
None in particular.
All right. So after the break, we will review your ITC top 10 as well as next week's big events. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we are back after the break doing a little bit of calculations, because as of this recording, the ITC top 10 rankings do not reflect the most recent results from the Nova Open. But luckily, we've got a slide rule here and we were able to figure it out for you. So your ITC top 10 will look something like this, unofficially, of course. In 10th place, Dana Olivas will stay put. Archon Skari will stay put at 9th. Our own Don Husen will stay comfortably at 8th place. In 7th place, Nick Gower. 6th place is Jeff Robinson. And where it drops down is actually Josh Death will drop down to 5th place, as Trent Northington and Nick Nanavati will jump up. As a matter of fact, Trent Northington will jump into 4th place. Matt Root will drop to 3rd place. Nick Nanavati will vault up to 2nd place. Wait a minute, where'd Andrew Ganyu go? Well, Andrew hasn't played a whole lot of games, so he will zoom up the rankings. He's currently in 100-something place, and he'll move up in just shy of the top 10. We calculate between 14th and 15th place. So that means your number one player, even after the Nova Open, will be none other than Mike Porter from across the pond. He'll hang on to that number one spot. So just not enough points from Nick Nanavati this particular weekend to dislodge him from the number one spot, but was able to knock down Matt Root to 3rd place. So a lot more to look forward to. Matter of fact, Ray, what do we have going on next weekend?
All right, next weekend we've got the Chicago Open GT at Grognard Games, the Warzone Montreal GT at Ecole Secondaire Gerard Fillion in Quebec, the Clash of Titans at Matrix Card and Games in California, and then the Lords of Sydney 40K Series 2018 Final at the Hall of Heroes, Campbelltown, in Campbelltown, I believe that's New South Wales.
Awesome. We will look forward to that, as well as any additional GW news as it breaks throughout the week. Thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. If you liked what you heard here, please leave us a comment on both our Facebook page as well as the iTunes comments. Again, we can't get better without your guys' feedback. Until next week, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Don.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.